policies that we can really support in the current Israeli government. What I would propose, and strongly so, is that we declare all of the far-right terrorist ministers, and there are a number of them, persona non grata. We prevent them from entry into the United States, and we refuse to deal with them through our U.S. diplomats in Israel.
Just about a time. Richard Silverstein, Dekun Olam, that's where he writes. We thank you for being with us on Flashpoints today.
Thanks again, Dennis. Take care.
You're welcome.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Monday, January 16th at 1 p.m. for the live broadcast of the 38th Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Tribute. The annual tribute event at the Highland Christian Center features stage performances and speakers, including Danelle Damon and Greater Works Choir. That's the live broadcast of the 38th Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Tribute, broadcasting from the Highland Christian Center on Monday, January 16th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland, Oregon. Well, good morning. Here it is, January. This is Len Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. And beside me, to my right, the Venerable Jim Gilbert.
Morning, Glenn. 2023.
Thank you. We are here once again recording live ahead of our broadcast date at the Liberal DACA recording studio. It's kind of a moving name.
Yeah, it actually is pronounced Dacha.
Dacha. In Russian.
Yep.
I'm not sure what it is in German.
I don't know either.
I'll have to ask Anne. Anyway, welcome to the Dirtbag, a garden variety show where we talk about just about anything related to edible gardening. And we've got a full show today as usual. We'll start out with our plant of the month. Regular listeners and maybe even first-time listeners may have heard in our opening song, which is by The Who, that they sing about scraping and plowing and see the cabbage coming through or growing through. And that's our plant of the month, cabbage. One of the first things that we can plant around here, one of the first annual vegetables. And boy, out here today, it's pretty nice.
Nice day, yeah.
Somewhat sunny.
Yep.
Mid-40s. Cabbage could grow in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not sure if it could germinate, though. But we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. And yeah, we certainly don't know what's going to happen next week.
You know, that's right.
But right now it feels good.
Yeah. One day at a time here. We will talk about collecting scion wood. The fruit plants are dormant now. Just about anything's dormant, or not everything. And that will tie into our musical selections today, too. We'll have the answer to last month's garden stumper, which no one got without multiple hints. Did you read all the way through that email chain to figure that out?
I did not, Glenn.
Oh, okay. Jim said, why didn't this guy qualify? Well, I was leading him. It took about three or four emails, but I said, well, you're getting close. So he would guess again. Anyway. And then we didn't get around to it last month, so we'll spend a little bit of time talking about fruitcake and how much we all enjoy it. And maybe Jim will be making more next year. Maybe not, but he uncovered this trove of several. Did you eat them all up?
I have one. I took them up to Bellingham to share them with my daughter and the grandkids. And I have one little slice left.
Out of all those loaves?
Well, it was only one that I was left by the time you and I, we all got to share it. And
I thought you had four or something.
I did originally, that I'd found in the freezer, but the first three were eaten.
Oh, I see. So it's just a little slice left?
A tiny little bit.
Okay, well, then you're going to have to
token.
Take some time next season.
I guess so.
Make another batch.
Keep encouraging me.
Okay. Because Joe and I like it.
Yeah.
And that, I forgot to say, Joe's across the road from us here. I mean, the table is Joe of Bergman Productions.
Yay.
Yeah, Joe Wilson. Yeah,
yay,
if you had any recording, video, he's your man. Man, I'm sold.
Yep.
Bergman Productions. You can find it online, I'll bet, too. Yes. Mm-hmm. And on some very warm hats that Joe gave us.
Mm-hmm.
You can find his little logo on that, too. That's a nice hat. I wear it all the time now when I go out for a run. Mm-hmm. When it's cold, real cold. That's the one I use. So Bergman Productions. Let's see. And then we'll also talk about catalogs because it is the season to be thinking about that. And if you get on a catalog list for at one time, then you're going to be on it for 10 years probably.
And, you know, the nights are long and you can sit by the fire and read the catalog. I mean, of course, I don't know how many people do paper catalogs anymore.
Yeah, but that's true.
You can read it online. Google sites, ubiquitous.
Yeah, they're there. And seeds are starting to show up in garden stores too.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts. In this day and age, there's hundreds, I would venture to say, seed producers, or packagers anyway.
It's fascinating, really, the variety and diversity of what we can grow.
And then a little primer on building and using raised beds and even why we would want to use raised beds. When I started out, that's what I did, and that's what I still do. So I'm a little more lax now on actually the border of it, but I'll talk more about that. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term is dwarf, fitting right in here with some of our tasks for the season. And then finally, Jim will review some of the plants that he's gleaned, we might say, from Ukraine back in the day.
Yep, it's a fascinating story, actually. And I'd love to share it.
And I'm not going to talk about what's annoying me, by way of comparison, that I don't know. Do you use QuickBooks in your business, Jim?
No.
Oh, Joe does. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't even know if you know this, Joe, but when there's a date that in your, you know, there's dates all the time in invoices or orders or whatever. And if you put the cursor there and you want today's date, what do you do? Oh, you're going to learn something today, Joe, too. Yeah. You punch the key T and today's date shows up. Now, not only that, but if you were, say it was today's date, January, which we're recording on the 6th, and you want to go to the 1st of the month, what would you do? See, this is just so intuitive. I'm annoyed that others don't have this, like Excel.
T1?
No. If you want the 1st of the month, M. Okay, let's see how intuitive this is. What if you want the last day of the month?
L.
Why would you punch L, Joe?
Last.
Well, that might be the last of the year. So what if you want the last of the month? H. Month. Oh. Okay, now you'll get this. What if you wanted the first of the year?
Why?
Yes, the last day of the year.
R.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just so intuitive. And if you want yesterday's date, you punch E and then minus.
Oh, wow.
And it goes back one day, or plus if you want to go forward.
I had no idea.
So that's, it's just, it's annoying that I can't do that in other programs. Yeah. Maybe until they hear this thing. But I learned that from a YouTube tutorial some years ago, and I didn't learn what I really wanted to find out, but I learned that that was worth it.
I'm going to try it.
Yeah, it's satisfying every time I use it. So anyway, let's talk about garden stuff.
Let's do that. And all those software developers that are listening to the show take your advice, I'm sure.
Yep. We're going to hit the big time here, folks. All right. Well, enough of that. Let's talk about cabbage. You got your hi-hat and... Yep, he sure does. Okay, cabbage. Well, as I mentioned earlier, cabbage is one of the first things that you can start even indoors. This month would be fine because you could probably grow it for 4 or 6 weeks inside. Plant it towards the mid to end of February, depending on what the weather is. But they're very tough plants. You'd have to harvest it off, of course. But cabbage is, I think, an undergrown plant in the garden. It's not necessarily hard to grow. There are some pests that you would need concerned about, both slugs, the imported cabbage moth, which you might call that white butterfly that flits hither and yon, and then also aphids. But they're not a big problem because the leaves are so dense, and it's easy to spot the pest. I start the various seeds, and there are various types of cabbages. The green cabbages, which we're probably mostly familiar with, that are smooth-leaved. Lots of varieties, ball head, round, golden acre, you name it. They're there. We also have the Savoy cabbage, which is a little different. It's crinkly-leaved. It's a little tenderer, maybe has a slightly different flavor. Chieftain, Savoy King, or some of those. And then there's red cabbage. Ruby ball is one that I grow a lot. And then Chinese cabbage, which I haven't grown this too much, but they more resemble maybe a head of lettuce coming out more straight up. But so various types there of cabbage. Easy to grow, really. I think the soil temperature should be at least maybe 50 degrees, which wouldn't be hard to find in late February when the sun comes out. And otherwise follow, regular seeding if you're starting inside. Or you can just go to the nursery and buy seedlings. Pretty easy. Cabbage. And it's pretty versatile in dinners, too.
I love cabbage. And it's interesting because we talk about Ukraine a lot these days and my travels in that part of the world. Cabbage is very, very popular. Every garden, and they store well during the winter. So they keep them in the root cellar, the heads of cabbage, and they're consumed all winter. So it's a very, very healthy plant, healthy food, and relative, like you say, easy to grow plant. And I love it. It's great tasting.
I remember that story about, what did the Germans use in World War II to make to make sauerkraut? Mm. It was cabbage. It's just a joke, but. That's what we normally make sauerkraut out of, isn't it? It's cabbage?
Yeah. Well, kraut is.
Right.
By the way, the Russian word for cabbage is kapusta.
Ah. Well, it's a cool season crop, and so there's some cool seasons, I think it takes that to grow it.
One of the times I was visiting a friend in Siberia, I was walking in his garden. He had people in that part of the world are really into their gardens because primarily for survival reasons. It's a
good
food,
reason.
Yeah, food's expensive in the store and you need some in the winter. So they plant really intensely. And so I remember walking down the paths in his garden and basically stepping over the cabbage plants because there was no space I used except for these few places to put my feet.
Yeah,
it was great.
Pretty tough.
Yep.
Huh.
Dedicated.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into our musical breaks here. We're going to talk about Scion Wood, and my theme for the tunes this time has scions. What do we got here? Airplane. And because one definition of scion is the offspring. So we're going to be talking about sons and daughters. here and then for this the thing here. So we've got CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival, doing Fortunate Son. This is from 1969, but it still sounds pretty darn fresh.
Yeah. Okay. It ain't me. Yeah, you just check the lyrics sometime on that, and that's still fresh. Yep.
You know, Senator's Son. And okay. Creedence Clearwater Revisited. At one point, more popular by record sales, Beatles.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Sion Wood, the offspring of the plant.
Yes. Yep. Very important thing to have if you want to make more of something. And this is the time to collect it. So, you know, we used to, sadly, the Home Orchard Society is no longer functioning, but we used to have scion exchanges and people would bring scion wood from all over and trade them, pick up different ones, varieties were available. Now it's a little more challenging to do that, but I think there are some sources out there.
We should. I know we talked about this before, you know, where can you get them now that you can't do that? And you remember what we found out?
No, I don't.
We should probably try to get that for next month. I'll make a note of it here.
Sure.
And see if, see I think where you can get them.
Well, you know, and there were some scion exchanges in different cities too, different places besides the one here in, that most recently happened in the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Oregon, in Canby. But, if you have a tree that you really like and you want to make more of it, this is the time to collect the scionwood, which is basically the one-year shoots that grew, the ones that grew last year. Pencil size is typically what you collect. And while it's still dormant, of course, you can usually get away with doing that even through February, but you don't want to wait too long.
And we know it's dormant because the buds aren't swelling yet.
Buds are tight.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, when you cut it, it'll be alive.
Yes.
That's different than dormant.
That's right. Yeah. Live is good. Yeah. Dead is not.
Yeah. If you don't see green, then...
That's right. It's brown and breaks off with it like a stick. You know, well, no, that's probably not what you want. But then the next thing is storage of the scion wood. And that's pretty important because a lot of people make mistakes by storing it too wet. We'll take a wet rag or paper towel and wrap it up in that and put it in the refrigerator. And if it's too wet, it will rot and before you can use it. So what I do is just take a plastic bag, like a Ziploc bag, put the scions in that, put just a few drops of water in, like take my fingers, put them under the faucet, get those drops, throw them in that bag, seal the bag, and that's all it needs.
Store it anywhere in the fridge.
In the fridge is fine. And then you can get rootstock, I'm sure, locally. I know Run Green World sells it, and there's probably other sources. And then you you graft it, which hopefully
we'll talk about that maybe.
You're right. Well, maybe the next
March.
Month.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Where do you learn how to graft? Right. That was what also you could learn with the Home Orchard Society.
Maybe I'll try to get her. Can't recall her name right now. Who runs the offshoot, but the center at the Orchard Education Center or something like that.
Clackamas Community College, right.
It's at community.
The Home Orchard Society Arboretum used to be.
It's still there,
yeah.
It's just a different name.
Right.
But it's the same thing. But they still have classes. I see them advertised and whatnot. I'll try to get a guest shot from.
Yep. Yeah, and in the meantime, listeners, if you want to propagate something, this is the time to collect the wood. So,
but too early to propagate.
You wouldn't propagate it now. You want it to get, usually you can do, there's two different kinds of propagation I could describe for, say, an apple tree. One is on rootstock that's actually growing, either planted in a pot or in the ground. And the second is what we call bench grafting, where you can take dormant rootstock and dormant wood, scion wood, and put them together on a table and then plant that in the ground. So, and we do that ourselves here at the nursery quite a lot.
But not yet?
Not yet.
Right.
No,
okay.
No.
Yeah, we'll cover that when we cover that.
Yeah. But like I said, the main thing is collect the wood. Pencil size wood is good, and store it properly, not too wet, moist and cold. And then the next step after that will be grafting.
And you'll probably want to get at least maybe 3 or 4 buds on that.
The stick that you collect at least, yeah. Yeah. Normally, if you cut a foot-long piece, you'll have probably 8 buds or more.
Right, so you might even get two pieces out of that eventually. You'd keep it in the foot-long piece.
Depending upon how desperate you are and how little wood you have, you can graft with 1 bud.
Yeah, you have a better chance with more buds. Is that
2 buds is usually what we do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I would, that's why I say, you know, why you'd want to get at least 3 or 4 is because one of them maybe, that doesn't look so good.
Yeah, no, it's I say a foot long, usually, you know, collect foot long pieces, but if it's a very vigorous growing tree that you're getting wood off of, you might have 3 to 4 foot long shoots that you can cut those into foot long pieces and store them that way.
Uh-huh. Okay. Scion wood.
Yeah.
We like that. It's a good way. One of the things that I do, I don't do much grafting anymore because I really don't have places to put anymore. Fruit trees, but I have some fruit trees that are actually 75% of my trees are all on P22 rootstock. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of unusual now, but I've really liked it because they're really small, and we'll talk about that when we talk about dwarf.
Yeah,
but it several of them send out the rootstock sends out their own shoots, and if I play my cards right, I can just pull a chunk off from the root ball of the rootstock, and it'll have roots on it. And I can use that as rootstock, and I've done that a dozen times.
So that's an amazing process you're describing, and one that's used pretty widely in rootstock nurseries. I mean, there's actually nurseries that grow rootstock.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For that. And one of the ways a stool bed is what it's called. And basically, you plant the rootstock like you're talking about, and then what they do as it grows, it sends out shoots. They put sawdust around the base of it, and they keep building the sawdust taller and taller until it's probably 6 inches above where it was when you planted the plant. And those shoots that have gone out of the base of that rootstock will then root into the sawdust, and then in the fall you take the sawdust away, and you've got multiple rooted shoots.
So they probably clip them.
And they clip them off.
Yeah, that would have been smarter than the way I do it, which is easier. I just pull it off, and if it doesn't have enough roots, then I go to another one because I don't need that. But that's explains why the bottom of the rootstock is a clean cut sometimes.
Yes, exactly. And then it starts over. Then they leave. Then, of course, they're taking the sawdust away. It goes through the winter. Then in the spring, they start doing the same process again. New shoots will start to grow. They put more. Uh-huh. They put the sawdust back on and pile it up as it grows.
How many they might get from one?
Oh, probably a dozen or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, fortunately, plants are great.
Yeah, I know. They're fine.
Yeah, that's right.
cooperate with us most of the time.
Right. Okay, before we get to our the answer to the old garden stumper, garden. That's okay. We'll do it right now.
Sorry.
We have, I'll talk about the answer to last month's puzzler, which several people wrote emails. In fact, we should mention that again right now, that this is recording, live recordings, can't take phone calls. But if you do have any gardening questions or the answers to the stumper, then send us an email.
We would really love to hear from somebody, any question that we haven't had, because we can't do this live right now. It's nice to hear from folks. So.
TheDirtBag@kbu.org. The Dirt Bag. Last month's Garden Stumper was an homage to the organic gardeners of Cuba. And the question was, which of the following are native to Cuba? And the answers were, the choices were pineapple, mango, banana, sugarcane, or tobacco. Now, they got all of those there, but only two of those are native. Pineapple is native, but it's not the big pineapple that we think about in the stores. These are smaller, like softball size. It tastes like pineapple. Maybe not as sweet, a little more chewy, at least the ones we had. And also tobacco. Although there may be some disputing this, that it might have been imported to Cuba some 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. So what counts as native, you know? But anyway, those are the answers to the last ones. And our ace listener, Heath, he guessed a couple. And at one point I said, well, close, but no cigar, pun intended. And so that sent him down that path. And then he wrote, oh, did I say this? I meant to say this. So I couldn't in good conscience award him the prize, which is a free sharpening at Coley Farm Store. A free sharpening of a garden tool, hand garden tool.
And my guess is Heath has a lot of sharp tools now.
Yes, he's one of our, he knows how to write in to thedirtbag@kboo.org.
Right. So I have a really easy
stumper. Yes, this is the stumper. New stumper.
The new stumper. And it's like so easy, folks. I feel like we just don't. The lines are going to burn up as soon as you hear it. But anyway, I thought it'd be kind of a fun one. So I was thinking. Well, and actually, just we're talking about propagation using cyanwood and so forth to make another apple tree. So people ask me questions like this. Well, why can't I just plant a seed, an apple seed, for example? Or a pear seed and grow my tree that way.
Like an avocado.
Yeah, or anything. And I should say that virtually all fruiting plants that I know about anyway are not grown from seed.
Well, could all grow from seed, like a citrus?
Well, a plant will grow from seed, but I don't want to give the answer yet, Glenn.
Okay.
So all those plants can grow from seed. Why don't we do it that way? What's the main reason that we don't plant apple trees from seeds of apples? And I sort of want to say that if you get extra points, if you give more than one reason, there are several reasons, but there's one main reason.
I'll talk to Farmer Ted at Coley Farm Store and see if they... They get extra sharpening for extra credit?
Right. Sharper sharpening.
Razor sharp.
Exactly. But it's a question that's asked a fair amount to me. So I thought it would be good to bring that up. And then next month we can explore it a little bit.
Sounds good. So what do they do if they have the right answer? or just want to guess.
They send an email.
That's right, to thedirtbag@kboo.org.
Yep.
And the first person with the correct answer will win our prize. Okay. Well, let us move on then to the... let's take another musical break here. This is from... speaking of old guys, we are. This is from an album, John Mayall. We all know John Mayall, don't we? Yeah. He recorded... It's called his 70th birthday recording, live show. So he was 70 when he made this program, and he's still got some pretty good pipes at 70. Mm-hmm. I think he's still alive, but this was, I think, in 2003, so that's 20 years ago now. Whew. Mm-hmm. I was thinking on the way out here, my little old pickup now is 30 years old. Yeah, 1993. And I'd get a new one if they made small pickups, but they don't. That annoys me.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I saw in Korea was a Hyundai little pickup, wide enough for two people sit in a electric. And I thought, I really want one of those, but, you know, it's in Korea and hard to get it over here.
Yeah. Okay, so this is an old tune by, what is it, L.B. Lenore, something like, I can't remember his name. But anyway, John Mayall and the Blues Breakers here with a part of our Scion theme. This is Talk to Your Daughter. To your daughter. Yeah, that's an all-star cast there. I mean, a lot of players went through the Blues Breakers. You know, Eric Clapton was there at that party, or that show there, too. So, okay, well, this is the Dirt Bag, and we're going to talk about... Let's talk fruitcake here. We talked a little bit about fruitcake and catalogs. I guess we covered that, didn't we? Yeah, my bad. We're going to move on then to building raised beds or using raised beds.
Well, we didn't talk about catalogs.
Oh, we didn't.
No.
Why didn't we cover that at that time?
Well, I don't think we did. I mean, we were going to talk about, you know, all the different places where you can get seeds and plants.
Yes,
and stuff,
let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So
that's what we said. We've got the 100 seed catalogs around.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I first think about local or regional seed companies and plant companies. And I used to have a year back when I founded One Green World, that was our catalog, was a retail plant catalog. And now One Green World is doing really well and under different ownership and a good place to get plants. I mean, because they get a lot of them from us.
Careful there.
I know. But anyway, the plant world is incredible, and I think one of the reasons that I got into it was because I wanted to sort of celebrate that diversity that some of the older companies were really doing the same thing year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really cool varieties out there, all sorts of fruit that people should grow, I think. So anyway, we've talked about a lot of those on the show. But so Burnt Ridge Nursery in Washington is another good source for plants. Rain Tree Nursery, around for many, many years. Another source that I think of the Northwest companies in particular.
Yeah.
And I know you probably talked
about it. Maybe we can try to get a list. I think we've done this before in past shows too, but I there's dozens of Oregon seed companies, for vegetables and these days, I think if you have, it's nice to support the local companies, certainly, but if you want to get seeds, you can get them from wherever and they'll still grow here.
Oh yeah.
Because it's not like the seeds that come from, I don't know, Nebraska are different genetically than they are from here.
Yeah, I think so. one of the big differences between plants and seeds, of course, vegetable gardens usually are an annual thing.
Yeah.
And so, and the vegetable seeds are, like you say, will grow here pretty much as well as anywhere else. Plants, on the other hand, I like the nurseries I just mentioned because a lot of the plants they offer are really selected for this climate in this region.
And just to be, just so we're very clear, we're talking about grown plants, not talking about a plant to be from a seed, for example.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like an apple varieties, pears, all the peaches, those sort of things.
And I mean, that could be, we could say the same too for ornamental plants.
Yes.
I don't know if Monrovia has a bad rap or not, but if plants are grown in California and then sold here, they may not be the same as if they're grown here and sold here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, a lot of when I was first getting into this, the companies in the Midwest and the East Coast were very popular here, nursery companies, but some of the varieties they were offering were not suited for this climate.
Right.
Either they ripen too late or disease prone, whatever. And we do have a unique climate here. So it's been one of the challenges in the 40 plus years I've been doing this is to try to find varieties that really be happy in the Pacific Northwest. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I regret is that the houses that are built now are, there's not much growing room in the city. And a perfect example at my house, or in my neighborhood, the house across the street was raised, scraped in the last year or so. And now, and it was a 50 by lot, 6 houses will be going onto that lot.
Oh, man.
And so they're, they share walls, so they're tall and skinny. And, they're not tall, 2-story, but not much, or there's a little, not much growing room in the front and back. So, fruit trees are really out of the question. I mean, you only have 10 feet. So.
And that's sort of something in favor of having a community garden area where there can be, you could plant a fruit tree or something. One of the interesting things that really bugs me, talking about things that this not only irritates me, it's painful to me to see a current subdivision going in near Canby where basically they scrape the topsoil off. This topsoil that nature has built for hundreds of years and some of the best farmland in the world, and they scrape it off, and then they build the house on it. So when you start gardening in that yard, you're starting with a deficiency of your soil already,
And they'll probably come in and put a little something. This kvetch fest here? They'll probably put some top dressing on it or something, but the hard pan remains.
Yeah, it's very painful to see. Yeah. So I would, but we also need... We need what they do in Ukraine and other parts of the world is they have a place out in the country where people have a garden. That's what when we used the word dacha earlier in our show, the dacha is the summer home, and it can be not necessarily a home. It can be just a little tool shed. And when you had a job working at a factory, you got a little plot out in the country where you could grow your vegetables. And that's a pretty neat system to me.
What do you think the chances of that are happening?
Okay, here.
Well, yeah, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the as far as I know, there's one, well, actually a couple community orchards that from Portland Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are just community garden plots.
Right.
Where, you know, it's from vegetables. And, well, you see berries, raspberries or something like that growing there too. But I don't think you could plant a fruit tree, for example, any kind of tree.
Yeah.
Because for one, it'd shade a lot of people's gardens. But.
Yeah. And in one way we could say, I mean, this show is probably designed for people that have a little bit of space, some kind of space, whether it's community space or their own. To do some growing, but you can also grow stuff in pots. You know, I mean, we've been working on, like these columnar apples that we really enjoy the fruit on, and you can grow those in a container. So you could put it on a balcony or on your porch.
Yeah.
And, you know, take a little more care because you got to water them. I mean, you can't let them, you know, nature's not going to take care of the watering needs like they would have planted in the ground, but still.
Back in the day, meaning pre-COVID, for a decade or more, I've taught classes at Garden Fever. That's not the right word. Had classes Saturday, and then we'd spend an hour there and then go to my place, which was a mile away or so, for another hour showing what we talked about. And one of the most popular classes was, what did they call it? You know, potted container and potted plants or something like that. Because more and more garden areas, that's what all you have.
Yep.
You know, like you were just talking about for that. You said that you talked to an Englishman at one point some years ago, presumably, and he said they had what they called an allotment. Mm-hmm. They lived in a place where they could not, but they had an area called an allotment within a larger community garden. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could presumably walk or bicycle to it. You know, we don't want to encourage people to drive. You know, I got to go 15 miles to my garden. That's not going to happen. I've gardened, you know, when I was younger, and more is better. You know, a spot 2 miles away, and I did it maybe 2 years. It was just too much to take care of. I just didn't want to go over there.
Yep.
So anyway, this could lead right into what we could talk about next here, the raised beds. And, I'm sorry that I didn't kind of start this or at least talk about this a little bit a couple months ago, because an ideal time to begin raised bed gardening is when you have access in November or so to a lot of leaves that after you build your bed or determine where your bed's going to be, you could put leaves in there to kill anything that was there, even if you're building this raised bed on a grassy area. Put the leaves down and first area for the first year, just leave the leaves and plant through them. The leaves will, if you put on 3, 4, 5, 6 inches of leaves, they'll mat down to 2 inches or so by the springtime. And then when it comes time to plant that first year, don't worry about planting onions or carrots or anything else that you might want to broadcast the seed over the whole area. Just pick a spot, like tomatoes, and with your hand remove the leaves and prepare just that hole right there. You don't have to till the whole bed. Just prepare that hole for that tomato, and then 2 feet away, do another one. And you can do this for squash or broccoli or potatoes or anything. In fact, I use this exact same method, excuse me, even though I'm not converting land to garden space, if I've put in, if the crop that was there the current year just goes too long for tomatoes, for example. I'm still harvesting tomatoes in November, so it's too late to plant a cover crop, but I'll cover the bed with leaves. And then next year in this bed, I'll change to a different family of plants. So I wouldn't want to plant tomatoes or peppers or eggplants there because we want to rotate our crops, as we say. So I might plant, what's anything besides tomatoes? Squash, you know, just something different in a different hole. And I leave the leaves on forever, essentially, and they'll be incorporated in. But that, you could still try that if you had access to lots of leaves right now. The problem is there aren't many leaves still available in parks or streets or in your own yard. They're probably taken care of. But anyway, So for today, I'll just talk about what you might or why you want to choose a raised bed, and then what to use to make it raised, so to speak, or of the border of it. Really, the benefit of a raised bed is not so much the topography, the height of it. It's that you are concentrating your nutrients in that area. Excuse me. And you're not stepping on the soil. Those are two big things there. We don't want to compact the soil, and we want to keep nutrients there and not washed out or whatever. So you're just respecting that place. If you don't have the sods, then you may be just walking on it. Kind of like Jim was doing when he was stepping over the cabbage plants there in the far north. Yeah. So do you actually need sides? No. You can just pile your soil or leaves or whatever in there, but you wouldn't know it by looking at my desk, but I like a tidy garden. And so by keeping sides on raised beds, whether that's wood or rocks or cinder blocks or anything, it contains the soil and the nutrients and what that's going to be there. When I started out, I used almost exclusively 2x6s. I'm going to have you talk, Jim. I'm running out of voice here, I guess. And they lasted maybe, they weren't treated, 10 to 20 years. And then they composted. And so I've gradually been kind of replacing them with not necessarily 2x6s, but what I have. I guess my standards have kind of gone down a little bit. But the soil has not been rototilled in 20 years. 30 years in some cases. There's just no reason to once your bed is in good condition. And that's another thing about having a raised bed is that you're not walking on it to, as I mentioned, you're not compacting the soil. Plus, you're growing in it every year, you're planting cover crops, and you're keeping the soil in good tilth. This is what we're after.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll leave it there on the for raised beds, and I'll continue with that a little bit next time about, well, what we put in the raised bed. Or do we put anything in the raised bed? Yes.
We have to put seconds there. We have to put something in there.
We don't necessarily have to. We can just
have
plant.
A,
I mean, there's ground underneath, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you'd want to.
The idea is you have something in there. So another thing I've often thought about the benefit of a raised bed is that the soil will warm up a little faster,
yes,
too.
And the reason that warms up faster is because it dries out faster. And because it's not going to dry, it's not going to warm up if it's real soggy wet. And so by having the little raised part of it, it does drain, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's move on to our dictionary term.
Okay.
Dwarf.
Okay. Yes. Well, yeah, it was a pretty simple term. And a reason that I wanted to talk about it was because way back in the day, I know that there was a few of us sort of pioneering nursery folks who thought that the customer, the grower, should be able to know just exactly what they're buying when they buy a so-called, quote-unquote, dwarf fruit tree.
Yeah, good point.
And what we discovered was that there were the word was used very liberally.
Mm-hmm.
And in a tree that could be dwarf, might be called dwarf, could grow anywhere from, an apple tree, for example, could be growing anywhere from 6 feet to 15 feet tall or more.
Right.
And so
a big difference there for
pretty big
for a homeowner.
Yeah. And the only thing that people weren't called dwarf were basically plants grown with seedling rootstock or something, so that it would be, you know, so super vigorous that I remember when I moved to this place here in Liberal, there was a Gravens tree that was probably 40 feet in diameter and 30 feet tall. And, you know, that was not dwarf. So,
yeah.
So the main thing is, and some fruiting plants are sort of naturally dwarf. They just are compact is another word for it. But when it comes to apples and pears in particular, I'm thinking about, and there are definite big differences. And researchers have worked for many, many, many years developing rootstocks that make the tree more dwarfing.
And I'll just mentioned that you mentioned a dwarf apple or a dwarf pear, and that there's a big difference between the dwarfiness, if you will, between apples and pears.
Yeah.
The apple is much smaller, and a pear will not be nearly that small, even if it's the smallest, the dwarfingest rootstock you might have.
And that's really a good point, because we're here at Northwoods Nursery working, trying to find another rootstock, an alternative rootstock to make a more dwarfing pear.
Oh, good.
And we're using plants that are not directly related. They're not pear, like aronia, for example, or sorbus, and putting pear on those. And people have also used quince as a rootstock for pear.
Yeah.
To make them more dwarfing. But apple, the results of work on apple dwarfing rootstock was much more successful than so far with pear.
Yeah.
Like you say, the big issue with apple, and you probably have seen this yourself, I'm sure, with the more dwarfing ones, one of the characteristics of a very dwarfing stock is it has a fairly compact, weak root system.
Mm-hmm.
And in a windy location, or even sometimes
I'd say almost any location.
Any location, you got to put something to hold it up, because it'll just tip over. And but grows, other than that, they grow well.
Yeah.
And you talk about P22. I mean, that's one of the old very dwarfing rootstocks.
Yeah.
M27 was another one from the Malling series.
But I do have to. I mean, I've grafted most of these in the 90s. So they're well established now, but anything on P22, it's espaliered or staked.
Yeah. So we sort of figure that. So just to give you, just to use some numbers that are fairly common out there, like M26 is a we describe that as a dwarf rootstock, and it's one that, depending upon location, can be okay standing alone, but might need a stake to hold it up. M7 or is sort of the next one in our series. We call that semi-dwarf, listeners, if you're going to a nursery and buying an apple tree, for example, the nursery should be able to tell you what rootstock it's on, and you can, you don't really understand what that number is, you can look it up and see what it actually does, because they'll talk about a range in height. Like, for example, an M26 is usually described as a 8 to 12 foot tree, depending upon the variety and how vigorous it is. M7 would be 12 to 16 feet in size. So those kind of characteristics are fairly easy to find out.
Yeah.
And are useful for you.
And that's the most important piece of information for a gardener to get before they plant a fruit tree, you know, what the rootstock is, not how high it's going to be, because they don't know, they being the seller. And countless times I've encountered people who have picked up free, usually pear trees, left over from a well-meaning organization, but they didn't have enough places to plant them or whatnot. And so they'll tell them it's semi-dwarf or something like that. And a semi-dwarf pear tree, even a dwarf pear tree, I would argue, is going to be much larger than you want it to be without constant, meaning annual, pruning.
Mm-hmm.
And these ones you miss of a year and on a semi-dwarf pear tree, it can be 15 feet before you know it, and then 20 feet.
It's really hard.
And that's just too big.
It's hard to pick the fruit that high.
Well, yeah.
And somewhat dangerous, actually, if you climb that high on a ladder.
Yeah. One thing I learned about bananas, you know, the bananas were up there pretty high. I said, how do they harvest those? And so they just hack it down, because bananas are, they consider them annuals, or the fruiting stock.
Right.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. In commercial orchards, the tendency has been over the years to have more dwarfing rootstocks that can be picked from the ground, which is much more efficient than using ladders.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, that doesn't hurt for a homeowner either, to keep a plant that small.
Right.
And then we really have enjoyed the columnar apples, for example, which are not really truly dwarfs, but they are so easy to handle and typically are not as vigorous as a regular apple tree. So they stay dwarf for quite a while.
And fairly easy to prune.
Oh, I mean, extremely easy to prune.
One or two or three snips.
That's about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we want to leave a little time to talk about the Ukraine plants that you discovered on some of your, maybe one of your earlier trips there. And so we have about 4 minutes or so to talk about that.
Sure. And before we do that, I want to mention a song that I heard that you can find on YouTube. I heard it days ago on KBOO in the morning, a wonderful song about Ukraine. And it brought tears to my eyes, which it does a little bit right now, just thinking about it. But it's called Ukrainian Now, and you can find it on YouTube.
And is it by
John McCutcheon?
Not a Ukrainian.
No. Uh-huh. No. And John McCutcheon, in collaboration with Tom Paxton, did the song. But it's really good, and I encourage folks to listen to it. So I first traveled to Ukraine in 1990 with a group of people from mostly California rare fruit growers. And once I got there, that was my first overseas trip. And I had studied Russian language before many years ago, and I thought, well, you know, this would be interesting to see if anybody would understand me, and thankfully they did in some degree. And I realized really quickly that when I got there, the tour, it was a tour, and a lot of the tour was focused on tourist sites, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to check out plants, so I sort of took off on my own. But what really blew me away was we were at the Botanic Garden in Kyiv. They had a display for us, a welcoming event, and they had all these different fruits laid out. And I say most of them I'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I mean, what, you know, why don't we know about these plants in America, in North America? And for example, sea berry, also known as sea buckthorn, that was one that was there, is very, very popular. Honeyberry, edible form of honeysuckle that nobody I knew had any knowledge of in North America. Schizandra vine, otherwise known as magnolia vine, was another.
Is that an edible?
Yeah, very popular in Asia. In fact, I was at a Schizandra festival in Korea in September on our last trip.
You probably mentioned that.
Yeah, and cornelian cherry dogwood, known as, the Russian name is kizil, was an edible dogwood. And not only was it edible, it was good. And the beautiful red fruits were on a large bush.
I just want to clarify this. This was a botanical garden, but they were growing edible fruits.
This is what they do in that part of the world.
We don't do that.
I know.
I mean, we have experimental stations and whatnot, but that's not a botanical garden.
Yeah, it's very different there. Not only did they grow, did they have these fruits that I was talking about, they actually grew commercial fruit. They had a peach orchard.
Oh.
They grew kiwis. They grew hardy kiwis, which I already knew about, but they had their own varieties there, which I thought were very interesting.
Who owned the botanical garden?
It's a government botanic garden.
But they also had commercial operation going on? Or did they lease that out, or is that?
The people, you know, that's a really good question, how that all works out.
Okay.
But it's definitely the organization that runs, the government organization that runs the botanic garden, that grows fruit and sells it. They also sold plants. They had a little nursery.
Well, let's see, 1990, was that still part of the Soviet Union?
It was.
Yeah, so they may have been selling it to the...
Yeah, they had.
That's kind of the way it was.
One of the things that struck me about that, mentioning about that, but we can talk more about it later. But it really is it is that part of the world. People really value their fruiting plants.
It shows.
Yeah.
I mean, from that botanical garden.
Yes.
It'd be kind of fun to have that here. I guess the Home Orchard Society is the closest thing we might have, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the demonstration garden. All right, we're out of time, fellers. Thank you, Jim. Great information there. This is The Dirt Bag, a garden variety show. And
send us an email, folks. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether you got that garden stump or not, thedirtbag@kboo.org. Our last musical selection is actually a father and son here. Booker T and the MGs from an album 2013. His son, Ted, featuring this, called Father Son Blues. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. Be well.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.